Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Next Gen Podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Hello, welcome to today's episode, Politics Moving Markets. I'm Tim Vance-Mays, an executive director and a financial advisor with Intergen Wealth Partners here at UBS. We're coming to you live from our office in Dayton, Ohio. Today, we're going to discuss the crucial connections between politics, the economy, and the financial markets during this pivotal election year. Joining me for this discussion is John Savercool. John is head of the UBS Office of Public Policy and Governmental Affairs in Washington, D.C. He actually began his career on Capitol Hill in 1980, and after serving several congressmen and senators in varying roles, joined UBS in 2003, and we're very lucky to have him. So, John, it's a pleasure to have you on our podcast today. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you, Tim. It's really nice to be here.
Well, let's just dive right in. So, before we get into presidential politics, can you maybe share what you're watching in the House and Senate in the next several months?
Sure. Well, the House and Senate right now are really tied up into funding issues. They're in the last week, or hopefully the last week, of trying to resolve government funding for this current fiscal year 24. They should have that wrapped up very soon, and then they will move to another funding bill, the military aid funding bill for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. And there's been a lot of debate about that and negotiation about what that should do. The Senate has passed a bill providing the military aid. The House has not acted on it yet, but I think they will after the government funding issues are dealt with. So sometime in April, late April, I think that you will see the House pass a bill to provide military aid, further military aid to Ukraine and to Israel and to Taiwan, but it will be a different bill than what passed the Senate. And that will require another round of compromises, or maybe the Senate will just try to pass the House bill. But I think the takeaway here is that the military aid to Ukraine from the U.S. will be expanded significantly and will be approved sometime in April or early May. And those will be what those will be the issues that Congress focuses on primarily. There are other issues kind of floating around, like a ban on TikTok, a very limited tax bill that mostly addresses corporate tax provisions, but those will be dealt with later in the year. And I think that the funding issues will dominate the environment for the next couple of months.
Interesting. Why don't we go ahead and jump right into the presidential election? So it appears both parties have already decided on their respective candidates. President Trump has his share of legal challenges, and President Biden's age and well-being seem to be under question from time to time. Can you talk about possible scenarios that could lead to a different candidate being on the ticket?
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation and maybe disbelief among a lot of people I talk to that Biden and Trump will actually be the candidates we vote for in November, even though they have advanced in their party's nominations over the last couple of weeks. I think that we should all expect Biden and Trump to be on the ballot and to be active candidates when we vote in November. However, if there is a health scare with President Biden, there's an issue that might prevent him from running, the time that he would be replaced would not be now and would not be the next couple of months, but it would be in August during the Democratic convention. There's a procedure in both conventions, in both the Republican and Democratic convention, where the party can replace their nominees. They don't often do that, but if there's a reason, and if Biden voluntarily agrees to back off and not be the nominee, then that would be the time and the place where that would occur, not earlier. The same is true on the Republican side. If former President Trump, if his legal issues became too burdensome for him, then he could be replaced on the Republican ticket at their convention in July. It wouldn't happen sooner. Remember, no other candidates are going to be on the ballots for any of the remaining primary states. So it would be futile to try to pick a person now when they wouldn't have time and they wouldn't have the ability to run in enough states to win the delegates needed. So we're at a point now where the only way that Biden or Trump would be replaced is at the conventions in the summer.
Interesting.
Which would be a very interesting, they would make for very interesting conventions.
Yes, it would. Well, what about, I guess I never thought about this, what would happen if that health scare or the legal issue happened after the conventions but before the election?
The parties would still be in a position to replace that person with another person. And, you know, that would create its own set of complications because there would be a dispute in the Democratic Party about who would replace Biden. Would it be Kamala Harris? Would it be Gavin Newsom? Would it be any one of a number of other people who ran in 2020 and who would like to be president? So that would present Democrats with another problem, would probably fracture the party a bit. The same would happen on the Republican side. If Trump was to step aside, who would replace him? You just had a lot of candidates who Trump defeated. My guess is Biden and Trump would probably express a preference for who should replace them, and that person would be given the respect of being the nominee. But there is a way for both parties to replace the nominee if the nominees were unable to continue.
Interesting. Well, that's fascinating. So how about staying with the presidential election? Do you see a scenario where a third party candidate emerges, and what would the likelihood of that person actually winning be?
Yeah, Tim, I do see a scenario where a third party impact could be significant in this election. Usually when we go to vote, we notice a third party option or two on the ballot. And my sense is that most people ignore those options because they don't think that they're real. They don't think they'll be impactful, so they ignore them and they vote for either the Republican or Democrat. I think this year could be different because there's so much unhappiness with both Biden and Trump as candidates, even within their own parties. And I think that there are a lot of people who are looking for another option. I've made a joke of saying that I think more people, and you know, people would rather drink Drano than to vote for either Trump or Biden. And you find that certainly with the independent voters who don't have an allegiance to either party, but you even find that within a sliver of the two parties. So right now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is an independent candidate. Polling suggests that he would win about 10% of the vote if he ran. So not enough for him to win, but enough for him to pull votes away from either Biden or Trump. The No Labels movement will form a political party, and in my view, they will have a candidate for president and vice president sometime in April, probably. And that party is a self-described centrist party that will field a Republican and Democrat both on the ticket. And they will try to appeal to the people who I just outlined, those independent voters, the people in both the Democrat and Republican Party that are unhappy with the choice of either Biden or Trump. So I think that these candidates collectively, the third party group of candidates, probably don't have a chance to win the election. That's not a realistic goal in my view. But what they will do is they will take votes away from Biden or Trump. A No Labels Party candidate would probably take more votes away from Biden and maybe prevent him from winning some of the states that he won very closely in 2020. Like if you look at the swing states, the seven or eight swing states, half of them were won by only about 10,000 votes. So the question is, are there 10,000 people, voters, in the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, are there 10,000 people in those states who will not vote for Biden, who voted for Biden in 2020, but are going to vote for a third-party candidate instead and maybe deny Biden a win in those states? And you put a couple of those states together, and that could pull Biden under that level of 270 electoral votes that he needs to win. So that is a distinct possibility. I'm not predicting right now that it would happen, but I think that voters will have a more robust third-party option to consider in this year's election. And if enough of them choose that option, it could have an impact on whether Biden or Trump wins. A stronger third-party group helps Trump. A weaker third-party group helps Biden.
Interesting. Wow. Well, that's great perspective. For those of us that aren't in the political arena all the time, you forget just how narrow the last election was. And so it's fascinating to hear that. So maybe shifting gears a little bit, you know, during the last election, there was a focus on estate tax, you know, overall tax policy. And there have been discussions recently about the sunset provisions of those changes to the catch-up provisions for IRAs and 401ks and tax brackets, things like that. So are there any tax policies or retirement policy changes that we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think so. It's a good point, and it deserves mentioning again. The 2017 tax law that was signed into law by President Trump, the individual tax provisions of that bill expire at the end of 2025, not the corporate tax provisions, but the individual tax provisions. So the increase in the exemption amount for the estate tax, the increase in the standard deduction, the lowering of tax rates for all taxpayers, those will all expire at the end of 2025 if Congress doesn't act. So how those provisions will be extended or not extended or altered really depends on who wins the election, sure, not only for presidency, but in the House and Senate. So the people writing the bills will be the new president and whichever party controls the House and the Senate. So I am guessing that there will be some significant changes to the provisions you mentioned and to all of the provisions that are related to how individuals are taxed. The bill in 2017 was written by Republicans who controlled the House and the Senate and Trump in the White House. It's less than likely that Republicans will have full control of the House and the Senate and the White House in 2025 and next year. So if they don't have that full control, then I think that there will be some changes made to the act, and some of those tax provisions will be scaled back, or they'll be made less generous than they exist today.
Well, certainly something that we'll be keeping a close eye on with our clients. So aside from tax policy, what is the polling telling us right now about what's mattering most to voters this time around?
Well, a lot of voters are still concerned about inflation in areas that are important to them: groceries, gas, rent, homeownership. Those are still expensive. Voters are feeling that. Those inflation rates are expected to come down sometime later this year. Could help Biden, might not. You know, these things, changes like this need to happen months before voters feel something happening. Another issue that I think voters care a lot about, it's reflected in polling, it's either the number one or two issue, is the whole issue of immigration reforms and what's happening at the Southwest border. That's emerged as a major issue over the course of the last year. And I think a lot of people tie that to what they perceive to be higher levels of crime in some of the bigger cities. And they have a sense that there's a lot that's just out of control in our criminal justice system and on the Southwest border in particular. So I think that issue will play a bigger role than it's played in years past.
It feels like, just from absorbing media, that has been a partisan issue, which is becoming less so. Is that your sense as well?
Well, immigration reform has always been a bipartisan issue. I mean, Republicans, Democrats want to reform the immigration system, but they want to do it on their own terms, and they just haven't been willing to be enough compromise-oriented to get a bill done. So I would say it's fair to say that both parties would like to see some reforms. I think there is some consensus now that things on the border can't continue as they have been. The root of the problem is really the generosity of our asylum system, which allows immigrants to come into the country, claim persecution in their home country, and then have a legal process that determines whether that's valid or not. The legal process now is delayed for years. And in the period of those years, the immigrants are allowed to enter the U.S. and go wherever they want. And they often don't come back to their court case, and they just are absorbed into the illegal population. Mm-hmm. over time, there is very little agreement on how to reform that system particularly.
Sure.
And that's at the root of the problem right now. And so there's a lot of bipartisan talk about making changes and about maybe adding new Border Patrol personnel, things like that. But there isn't a bipartisan consensus on the most important issue, and that's the abuse of the asylum system.
Well, and I imagine that the reason that the cases are delayed is just the overwhelming number of them.
And the judges, they're just, it's not common for so many people to claim this status, and they just basically overwhelm the court system and the number of judges we have assigned to hear those cases.
Right. So maybe shifting gears a little bit as we start to finish out, one thing that many investors worry about is how the markets will perform depending on whether a Democrat or a Republican are elected. That's on a lot of people's mind, but the fact is history shows us that which party controls the White House has little impact on the overall markets. But having said that, are there some specific opportunities or things that we should be watching out for during this cycle?
We have had a Trump administration. We've had 3 years of a Biden administration. I think the markets know what they're going to get in terms of policy. They would get less regulation. They would get scaling back of regulation in a Trump administration. They get a little more regulation in the Biden administration. There's already been a big regulatory program enacted over the last year or so. I think the markets know what to expect, and they're really focused on what they don't know. And what they don't know is what's going to happen around the world. And so they're nervous about some of the geopolitical challenges that we face today or that the world faces today. What's going to happen in Ukraine with the war? Will it end? Will it end more quickly under a Trump administration? Probably would. In the Middle East, what happens? I mean, I think Trump and Biden have a different relationship with Israel. There may be fewer hands on what Israel does in a Trump administration. Is that good or bad for the Middle East? Those questions are being asked, and I don't think people really know right now. I do think that in a Trump administration, you would see a lot of new tariffs applied to goods, so there would be some hiccup in trade policy, particularly as it affects the EU. So there'd be some movement away from our reliance most heavily on European allies to a greater reliance on allies in the Pacific, Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand, the Philippines, countries like that. There'd be more of a focus on China than on the issues confronting Europe. So I think those would, and whether that impacts Ukraine, how that impacts Ukraine remains to be seen. But I think most investors seem to be nervous about those issues rather than the domestic issues because they're unknown.
Well, John, as we wrap up, what things did we miss today, or what things might you want to convey to clients looking at the intersection of politics and their wealth? Any kind of parting thoughts for us?
My guess is that a lot of people are disillusioned with Washington. Washington seems broken at many times, and it is broken to a certain degree. And I would urge them to be confident about Washington getting over a lot of this. I think we're in a ditch right now where both of the parties are controlled in Congress by their extremes, and it's hard to legislate when that happens. So I think that the solution is to moderate a bit, restore that moderation in Congress that often served as the basis for compromises. I'm not sure we'll see that anytime soon, but maybe we'll see that in a few years down the road. There needs to be a political appeal to that sentiment for it to evolve and to become kind of embedded in the political process. Biden and Trump are term limited, so whoever wins will serve for 4 years, and that's it. And then we'll have a new slate of candidates. So for people unhappy with the status quo,
just hang in there for 5 more years.
Hang in there. There'll be some changes down the road, and maybe the parties will remake themselves and we'll have different outcomes.
I love the optimism, John. So thank you so much. Know how busy you are. Grateful to have you here in Dayton, Ohio. You've been a great asset to the firm. We really appreciate you. So folks, that's it for us. Thank you so much for listening to the Next Gen podcast, and we look forward to you joining us on our next episode.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the NextGen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Energen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at energen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.